Hello, CarStack community. I'm Chrissy, the founding director of the CarStack project, coming to you from the land of the Web3. Today, I'm delighted to be joined by Polygon CSIO Mudit Gupta, who's going to talk about all the interesting innovations coming out of Polygon ecosystem so the developer can explore ways to not only scale up, but also get adoption for the product using the skill set they know around the Ethereum ecosystem and beyond, and find a way to really bring in the mass market adoption of crypto and Web3 they want to seek. Welcome, Mudit.
Thanks for having me. Super excited to be here, and this should be a fun chat.
Absolutely. So one of the things that I think people realize is that a lot of people talk about Web3 from a technology point of view, but if you look at the kind of broader view on the mainstream audio, the most exciting thing for people is when technology becomes more relevant, more adopted. And Polygon has been many times mentioned by the mainstream press as getting adoption and getting this kind of awareness that this is where the technology can cross over to a larger audience than the, let's say, the crypto or the Ethereum diehard. Can you tell us a little bit about all the activities, maybe from a technology point of view first, that's going on in Polygon? What's the vision of being able to have a toolkit for developer for the various needs of Web3?
Yeah, for sure. One of the main goals for Polygon is to make Web3 accessible to everyone. So not only are we building super cool tech, we are helping scale blockchains, we are building ZK rollups and everything, but our aim has always been to do that in a way that it's actually usable by the general audience, by most of the developers. We focus on both the developer experience and the user experience. We don't want some scientific papers to be just out there and just hoping someone else does the hard work. We go through with what we say, and we actually implement technologies that everyone can use. Right now, our Polygon proof of stake chain is live, and it is one of the easiest chain to use, one of the smoothest user experience, low gas fees, and it just targets the actual practical audience, and that's where you can see like it's one of the most used chains in the wild out there.
Mm-hmm. And you know, obviously Polygon POS came from the world where there was many different approaches of thinking about scalability, and it's the first one through the Matic token, but also more importantly with the compatibility of the existing developer toolset. Do you find that people who are coming to the Polygon system first learn about the POS and deploying application and then learn about the other stuff? What is the way developer to finding out about this rich ecosystem?
Yeah, for sure. So Polygon ecosystem is ever evolving. Polygon started out building out this Plasma chain, then moved on to proof of stake, which is the main product right now. And then we expanded to not just one proof of stake chain, but we started building out rollups and other scalability solutions as well. So the whole Polygon ecosystem is a collection of all those things. But mm-hmm. Right now, the proof of stake chain is the main product that is out there, and that is the gateway for all of the developers to come in. It is like EVM compatible. So if anyone is aware of Ethereum and have done development on Ethereum, they can smoothly transition. Otherwise, we have documentation, we have support, we have other community members helping everyone out to get started with the Polygon ecosystem.
Yeah, that's really great. You know, we deployed on some EVM chain on mainnet as well as Gnosis chain because we worked on a lot of Gnosis safe technology, and we were recently able to just deploy the POS, no problem. So it's really, really smooth, especially if you have the skill sets to learn about it. There are some businesses who want to have this easy to use experience, and they are basically shocked by how expensive it is to do anything on Ethereum mainnet. What are you finding is the business adoption story of the POS chain, especially around, you know, brands using it? Do you see that uptick increasing? And do you have some example of some of the success stories so far?
Yeah, for sure. There are countless success stories. So almost every major brand you can think of is working with Polygon in one way or another. Instagram is using it. Twitter is using it. Reddit is using it. Mm-hmm. In Web3 world, big companies like OpenSea are using it in terms of DeFi. Aave is using it, and like Uniswap is there, SushiSwap is there. All of the big players are there.
Right.
And the reasoning is very simple. So first of all, we make it super simple for them to integrate. They don't have the burden to really come into our ecosystem. It is a relatively smooth journey for them. And the other thing is we don't just focus on the tech side, but we actually help them throughout the journey. For example, I lead security at Polygon, and if any traditional company is working with any other entity, it might be Polygon, it might be a different company or something, security is always a concern for them. They want to know, they want to follow best practices, and they want to learn what the best practices are. Like if a new traditional company like Disney is coming in this space, they have no idea how, like they want to be secure, they want to follow the best practices, but they just don't have the right talent to know exactly what they need to do. Either they need to build their team from scratch, or just like we can help them out and just get them up to speed with all of the security aspects, other marketing aspects and everything. And that is why like this big corps have been trusting Polygon and using Polygon, because we don't only just like throw our technology out there. We actually help all of the customers throughout the way. We have extensive documentation. And if anyone wants any help, we are always available and they can reach out to us or the community.
Yeah, it's interesting how the security aspect really crossed over to a very different role in Web2. Web2 security is about secure data at rest. And here you're talking about enabling encryption and the associated task of like managing keys for users. What is the learning journey for people who are used to email-based account management, where it's entirely centralized control, to giving your user, in some cases customers, private key? Are there an education journey for people to understand that, you know, wallet issue? What is their sensibility around that right now?
Yeah, for sure. So the first thing, like I tell everyone who is getting into Web3 security, is that Web3 security is actually a superset of Web2 security. So everything you learned in Web2 still applies here. So keeping your password safe and everything, it's the same techniques apply here, except instead of password, now you're keeping your mnemonic phrase safe. So the underlying techniques are very similar. It's just the naming and certain specifications change. So we do help people around those. We have tons of educational material. Like if you're starting in Web3, as you mentioned, the first thing you probably need to do is set up a wallet and secure the wallet properly. Set up your mnemonic phrase properly. One of the most common methods I recommend to most people is like if you will be using the Web3 space a decent bit, get a hardware wallet first thing. And keep everything there. Don't keep it on your computer or MetaMask. And then in terms, the other thing you need to do is keep the mnemonic phrase of their hardware wallet safe. And the way I recommend people to do that is to split it in three components. Let's say the mnemonic phrase is 24 words. Split it in 1 to 16, 8 to 24, and 16 to 8. Roundabout. And this way, what you have is three chunks of mnemonic phrases. And you need any two of them to combine and get all 24, but like you can't do it with just one. So it gives you safety in the sense that if one person gets one of your seed phrases, they can't do anything with it. And also that if you lose one of them, then also your seed phrase is safe. So now you have three chunks, just store them at three different places securely and never put them on the computer, never like type it out, never copy paste or anything. And this way, you have decent security. Obviously, like if you are running a corporate organization and have to secure billions of dollars of funds of users, then the techniques differ. But this is the go-to method I recommend for anyone who is a bit technical savvy and wants to keep everything safe.
And it's fantastic advice, right? Because, you know, for splitting up phrases, there are techniques like Shamir's Secret, which is confusing to people and requires special support. This is kind of like a practical approach. It's a shame that the wallet application, where there's plugins or wallet, don't recommend that. There are still a little bit of suggestions that please copy and paste it somewhere, is someone else's problem. And it's a bit dangerous, I think. I would love for everybody to adopt your particular practical approach for organization. It really balances the ability to be maximally compatible as well as being, I think like 80% way on secure without having to deal with Shamir's Secret, which is only supported in a couple of hardware wallets. And then you have to explain people what Shamir's Secrets are, which is a more rigorous redundancy scheme that is not, I think, very popular today. What is your sense right now about the actual kind of concept of security? Do users still go through the trouble in writing down the seed phrase, or they use some other ways? I mean, we say don't, you know, store it in the digital media. Do you think people are following that advice?
Unfortunately, no. So from surveys I've done and practical experience, most of the people are either not saving it at all. They just click accept, done, skip, whatever. or they take a screenshot or a photo on their camera rather than writing it down. Both are not ideal because on phone, if you have Google Photo, if you're iCloud, Apple, Google, they both go through your images. They have your data then. If you take a screenshot, it's just out there vulnerable. So not ideal, but that is the current situation that we are trying to change.
Yeah. So, you know, and kind of following that thread a little bit, there's been some discussions about social recovery. Vitalik has a very famous blog post, and it's been pretty prophetic as almost anything he writes about. Like 18 months ago or 2 years ago, he wrote that. And there are some wallets like Argent is implementing some of those things. What is your sense of social security, where the social recovery, where the seed phrase doesn't need to be exposed to the user, but there's some way for them to get them back without necessarily using the seed phrase? That obviously may necessitate the use of smart contract wallets, and this leads to account abstraction we'll talk about in a second. But just the idea that your friends and family or people you trust or people of position or power can help you recover your wallet, so that the seed phrase, especially if you didn't just write it down, become less of a risk of you losing all the credibility and assets and sometimes value that you accumulated over time. What's your thought? Is that a direction we should go in the industry?
Yeah, definitely. Social recovery is definitely important, not just because you need it when you lose access of your wallet or any of those scenarios, but also for estate. Like if you suddenly die for unforeseen circumstances, you want your assets to be transferred to your loved ones, and without a proper social recovery process, they will likely be just lost. So definitely social recovery is required. Unfortunately, there's no standard way to do it right now. You can expand on the like seed recovery phrase method we just talked about, where you have three pieces. Instead of you keeping all of the three pieces, you can spread it through your family. And the Xiaomi secret sharing bit you talked about, that gives us more flexibility. Secret sharing, you can break it into 10 pieces, for example, rather than just three, and then say people should get 7 pieces together at least to make the recovery thing, so it can be more secure. And those things are possible for sure, but there is no real easy or standard way to do it. It's something that a bunch of companies are working towards, and I really hope and wish someone really figures out the UX here and actually makes it usable for people.
Absolutely. And you know, as part of the KnowsaSafe community, I know that there is a lot of thinking about using that basic infrastructure of KnowsaSafe, especially with the proven security of the asset management, and work out those UX issue. And one of the techniques that we have in our community is the module system, which allows you to add additional code in it, validated and obviously audited, but in a way that it can be the same code base securing something versus having people writing random contract just for UX and then losing on the security. So I'm hoping that in the work that we do in that community, we continue making progress towards that area.
Yeah, 100% agree. KnowsaSafe wallets are definitely one way to do it. And as you said, with modules, you can probably add a social recovery module with some cooldowns and everything. You can definitely do a lot of cool stuff with that. Mm-hmm. We just like, this is something we really need standardization of. Like people need to work together and create a standard or EIP for it. Because the thing is, like, if people don't know how to, like, if you divide it perfectly, but your family members don't know how to access it or how to start the process, then it's pointless. So there needs to be one well understood, globally promoted way to do it.
Absolutely. And then there's a big problem is that people that, you know, I trust to help them, people that would trust me to help them with the social recovery, does not necessarily have the reciprocal trust. I may not trust them to recover for me. So there's a slight asymmetry, not only in information security practices as a kind of personal, but also on the knowledge, right? It's very hard to say, well, as long as you have Ethereum address, I can add you as a whatever. Well, getting an Ethereum address on the right network with the right keys, or even the fact that it's signature and doesn't matter, can't matter what a network, is still a challenging thing. So the onboarding do have to get better to onboard more people, not only as asset holder, but as recovery assistance for the asset holder. So we're definitely going to keep an eye out of it, and hopefully someone within the Polygon community push forward with a proposal, and we gladly participate in the EIP process. In terms of the onboarding issues, one of the things I've talked to some dApp developer working with brand loyalty programs and other type of like kind of end of the front end of bringing user on. They mentioned gas prices, even on layer two chains, such as, you know, Polygon POS with Matic, as a bit of a friction. So I think one of the techniques was once the wallet was created, there was a little bit of a tiny airdrop for the necessary to some mints and stuff like that. So it's not really fiat on ramp for the purpose of, you know, investment. It's fiat on ramp for the purpose of doing anything at all. What's your sense about the issues and the friction related to having gas to be able to actually perform the action? There are some projects like, well, can we do everything through signature without doing anything on chain? That's one way to do it. And the other people are thinking about maybe gas's transaction and, you know, gas station network. What's your sense on that kind of UX friction?
I think for now, gasless transactions are the best UX and like trade-off there versus cost. Big companies like Lens Protocol on Polygon are already using it. If you use Lens, all of your data goes on the blockchain, but you just sign messages and Lens pay the gas for you. Models like that, I think, are great to scale and get started because they have the smoothest experience. They do cost the developer something because they are paying the gas fee on behalf of the users.
Right.
But the developers can then charge like a monthly subscription fee or something like that in like regular financing terms that the user will be better or easily able to understand. There are companies like Biconomy that provide SDK to do it, gasless transactions on Polygon.
Yes.
And that's the, like, I think the best, it's not ideal, obviously, but it's the best method we have got right now, in my opinion.
So essentially treating gas costs as some sort of storage cost on Amazon Web Services, and then you have the developer essentially fronting the money for pay for those metered costs, and then, you know, forming another business model with a subscription or otherwise on top. Do you see the gas cost to be a big component within the developer cost basis, or because the networks are still relatively inexpensive, that's something they can afford? What's the actual developer spending on gas costs versus, for example, node hosting costs, which is could be significant for some apps?
So it really, really depends on the usage that the protocol is getting. On Polygon Proof of Stake network, like, at current times, it may cost like 1 cent per transaction. The fees can vary every now and then. But if we use 1 cent and we say like 1,000 users are using the app daily doing 5 transactions, that gives 5,000 transactions a day divided by 100, that gives you $50 a day. So it's not negligible, but that is something that can definitely fit in as like your operating expenses.
Right.
And if you start charging like $1 a month subscription fee to your users, even that should be enough to cover the charges, like if you want to scale. Or you can also go like pay as you go model or something like that, where users pay as much as they do like in terms of transaction volume. You can do neat tricks when you are doing gasless transactions, like bunching together a bunch of user transactions rather than paying for them individually. So
right.
You like collect like hundreds of those user interactions, small interactions, and then batch them together in one transaction. So you can do all of those things and make your gas cost lower. Right now, even for the biggest protocols out there, like Lens, which is getting significant usage in terms of gasless, they are able to sustain it by paying the gas fees. I'm not sure on the exact numbers, but it's not too high even for them.
Yeah, and it's really interesting how the Web3 and Web2 business model was so different. But when it comes to user adoption, then you can start borrowing from the Web2 bag of tricks. essentially, a cross-subsidies models for maybe even in a case tiering of power users who pay, and then that funds the thing. There was a really interesting announcement a couple of days ago, and this was kind of not completely related to gasless transaction, but does tap into the subscription aspect. The Visa announced that they did an experiment within the research to do a kind of scheduled payment, a type of like automatic deduction from wallet. And that could be, to me as a developer looking at this, similar to what Stripe can do, like deducting certain money from your debit card for a spilling subscription program. What do you think of like a Web3 native either subscription management model as another basic thing? And what's your sense of whether we will kind of build kind of like Stripe features within Web3 to support these other alternate business models?
Yeah, 100%. Subscription models are definitely needed because they are super good for UX. You don't want people to be like doing individual transactions and then remembering to do transactions every week, every month or whatever. So subscriptions are definitely needed. We just need to build them securely in Web3 world with proper permissioning and limits around them. We don't want to give unlimited approvals to everyone. We need to segregate amounts and educate people around it. And like, as long as we have proper education around what can be done and what should be done, then subscriptions are definitely going to be a widely used feature in the Web3 space.
Yeah, and it's really interesting to see that the value that exists in the ecosystem, such as, for example, USDC support, make the subscription quite easy to understand, right? If it's a dollar a month, then it's really a dollar a month in whatever your local currency, right? Versus, I think, when we were just, you know, playing around with various wallets on different network, including Polygon and Arbitrum, it's like, you know, did you still get the situation of 0.00013? and MetaMask is not fantastic about telling you how much that is in USD term, and sometimes I think that's confusing for us who experience devs in this arena, but I can only imagine what it would be for the regular user to see what is 0.000 something X ETH, right?
Yeah, 100%. Like, with practical like feedback we have gotten, MetaMask is one of the best wallets out there, but it's still a nightmare to use for new users. It has too many things going on at the same time that people just get confused. If you don't know what gas is, what ETH is, what gas price is, what like base fee is, what priority fee is, like, it just, every transaction has too many new words for a new user to understand.
Yeah, and I think this idea that like you have to switch networks and stuff like that, while they are flexible, and I think the UX is about as good as you can get it, it is confusing to anybody who hasn't done it for, let's say, at least 6 months, right? There's a 6 month learning curve for onboarding anybody to MetaMask. Maybe not to crypto concepts, right? I think they understand it, but it's really confusing. What's your sense of the bifurcation between working on desktop plugin-based wallet, which a lot of organization, other networks would like build their own plugins, and then the mobile wallet using Wallet Connect or similar QR code system. What's your sense of the adoption on those two approaches? Is plugins what we are, browser plugin what we are kind of destined to for growth, or do you see mobile wallet, which, you know, to us, looking at the adoption of mobile devices, seems much more of the larger total addressable market, but it doesn't seem to have the uptake that you would expect a year two or three into the mobile wallet revolution?
Yeah, so for normal payments and transfers and even NFTs, the mobile wallets are getting a lot of usage because it's easy to do transfers, and some NFT applications have good mobile applications. So it's just easy to do. But on the other hand, for DeFi, it's very hard to really use mobiles. The DeFi, for starters, like the websites are not responsive at all. Like, if you try to open it on a mobile, you just have a whole huge screen in front of you and things like that. So for DeFi, if you are just going to use laptop anyway to open the website, then people use the browser wallet. Like, they don't, then it's a hassle to get second device and scan the QR and then use it. And it's also not as safe compared to using a ledger on your laptop.
That's true. So because the DeFi, you know, with the trading interface type of paradigm has been more of a desktop big screen, not necessarily four screens like a trader, but certainly a bigger real estate does help. In the NFT side, especially on a mobile wallet, this may be a kind of related thing. Apple has been having some really interesting rules about what the wallet can and cannot do. There was a recent announcement from Coinbase Wallet, which is one of the top wallets on the field, for especially with the Coinbase brand, that says that you can't even transfer an NFT because the gas that is used to transfer it didn't go through the Apple tax or 30%. What's your thoughts on that?
Yeah, 100%. So there are, like, both Apple and Google, to some extent, they are trying to curb down on crypto for two reasons. One is legal uncertainty. They don't have 100% confidence on what is legal, what is not legal. So they are trying to take be on the safer side and trying to stop as much as possible. And the other thing is, they want to charge people as much fee as possible. So As you can see, they are like not just crypto applications, not just this gas fee bit, but they even like threatened Twitter to like they threatened Twitter that they will kick off Twitter from iOS store, which Elon like I think tweeted if they do it, he'll start a new phone company or something like that.
Yes.
So Apple and Google, they are very predatory and they will try to go after your fees. No matter like any transaction happening on Apple or Google, they want to get 30% cut. Unfortunately, they can't, obviously in crypto, they can't and shouldn't get that. Even as per the terms and condition, if the signups and purchase happen outside the application, then they shouldn't be charging it. And for wallets, like, so people are trying to work around those rules, create policies so they don't have to pay Apple anything, which I think like in these scenarios, Apple doesn't deserve anything. Nobody's using their payments gateway or payment railway. So they shouldn't be, people shouldn't be forced to pay them any fees. But we'll see, like it's going to be like, it's likely going to be a long stretch battle where Apple tries to pressure at least the smaller companies into giving up and the big companies get together, fight back. And a few years later, we probably have some court slapping some fines on Apple for predatory practices.
Yeah, it's especially with EU pushing on a certain angle and the regulatory aspects, and then you know big companies basically saying, "Well, we have you know we are equals here. Let's just figure out what the trade is." It's like patents, right? Nobody wins other than the big company horse trading between each other, providing you know, protection against smaller competitor. And in this case, crypto is the smaller upstart innovator disruptor. So we got to band together and try to, on one hand, deliver the best UX to the greatest platform, which is the mobile ecosystem. On the other hand, let's acknowledge the fact that right now, for now, Apple and Google is a type of regulator of sorts of what can and cannot be done. Let's shift the topic a little bit on some of the kind of the new development, kind of beyond the POS at chain, which is obviously the Scale product. Which one of your kind of like, you know, future kind of blockchain scalability solution are you most excited about? Again, you don't have to pick favorites, but more importantly, that you think the developer should be more ready to take on because it's the next thing that's going to unlock possibility and why?
Yeah, sure. So Polygon is working on multiple scaling solutions, but I am biased in the sense I have a favorite. Like I'm super big on ZK rollups and I'm not afraid to say that.
Yeah.
I think zero knowledge based rollups are the future. They provide the like easiest way to scalability in the sense they are super hard to build for sure. Super complex things. Mm-hmm. But once you figure it out how to do it, you can do it recursively for theoretically infinite scalability. So they are like hard to master things, but once you have them, they are the best solution theoretically, at least compared to anything else that is out there. So I'm super big on them. I believe the team at Polygon can pull it off. We have a testnet live already. You can go and play with Polygon ZK EVM. It is working. It's working super nice. It's currently going through audits and we are working through it. And hopefully we'll launch it after the audit process is done. So yeah, I'm super bullish on Polygon GKVM and all of the developers. I'm telling you, like, just get on this bandwagon. This is, I think, going to be the next hype.
Yeah, I think it's really interesting, right? Because the current deployed ZK solution requires developer to kind of learn a new tool set, sometimes a new language. And you mentioned ZK-EVM, which has a lot of letters, but it just means zero knowledge, but maintaining the compatibility EVM. How hard is that to pull off? Like to get something that was not really designed for the circuit type of approach, what's your sense of the compatibility? Is it really a plug and play, take the contract you've written and then deploy it the same way you would do with POS? Or is there some caveats in that transition from existing, let's say, mainnet contracts?
Yeah, it is actually a super complex thing to build because one is like EVM was, as you said, not built to be ZK based. So it is, EVM is so generic, it supports 256 bit like arithmetic, which is to build a ZK proof for it is super complex. So that just in itself was a super hard problem to solve. But the other second main issue with EVM is that it is not a fixed thing. It keeps changing. So all of the circuits and ZK proof you built today may not be valid tomorrow if EVM doesn't upgrade, and then it's just a miss. So the way we solved it at Hermes is we really like didn't convert EVM directly. We didn't directly generate proofs for EVM code, but we built out our own virtual machine that is running the EVM, and we are building proofs for our virtual machine.
Our virtual machine
is going to be constant, and it's just the thing it's running inside can change. It can run different things. So just to like say how complex this whole process was. Usually when you are building a software, you will just pick up programming language and write code and you have the software. For this ZKVM, we had to create our own programming language. Not just our programming language, but we had to create our VM that the programming language targets. So basically the computer that the programming language targets, that also is custom. Not only just that, but also the assembly level. One level, if you go one level lower, the assembly being used, like the VM getting converted to assembly, that is actually also custom. So it is a very complex architecture, very complex product to build, but this is what we had to do to get it out. It is working smoothly, but it definitely needs a lot more testing and audits to have confidence in it.
No, it's really good. This is the way, I think it's a bit of a lost art to think about this kind of layers of compilation. As a student at Columbia University under Alfred Aho, who wrote the compiler book, the Red Dragon book, I am certainly a bias towards everything is a compiler problem. And so it totally makes sense to me. But I think a lot of working developers in the field are not exposed to the computer science behind the fact that everything is compiled underneath all the way to the hardware. It is absolute right approach to have this intermediate language, and I applaud the team for taking that approach. It definitely makes your release a little bit later in the future, your first release, but it allows the incremental release to be compatible, and that's just a very valuable thing because the immutability of Solidity contract, especially with contract like Uniswap V1 even, it keeps working. And you wanted that to keep working even on a VM chain. I'm extremely excited about not only ZK as a succinctness and scalability principle, but also possibly in the future when we are able to tap on the technology for privacy, which isn't currently in the conversation right now. Like it is certainly a privacy technology that you can use in network like Zcash. What's your sense of ZK as a technology to improve on-chain privacy? Is that something Polygon's working on? Obviously, it's adjacent technology, but it's not applied in that way right now, is my understanding.
Yeah, for sure. So ZK rollups do enable the possibility of bringing in privacy. Although the ZKVM we are launching right now does not focus on privacy, we do have a separate scalability product called Nightfall. Is focusing on that.
I see.
Polygon Nightfall is focusing on privacy, and it keeps your transfer amounts and everything like safe, secure, private and everything. Polygon ZKVM does not focus on it. In the future, maybe, but right now we want to focus on first thing, actually making it work, showing people that this technology can actually work. And second is scaling the technology. The first version may not be like any more scalable than the proof of stake chain, which is already live, but it would show the possibilities that can happen. And then once we start optimizing and everything, then it can like easily surpass the proof of stake chain and anything else out there in the wild.
Yeah, and I think the fact that ZK circuits are validity proof and doesn't have that delay means that you can keep building it up with chains that secure other chains. And that's a real big advantage over optimistic approaches that exist in the current rollup ecosystem. So thank you for that. That's a little bit beyond the conversation we have, but I certainly acknowledge the hierarchical scalability that technology enables. Let's shift the focus a little bit about a couple of use cases that I think people are quite excited about. One is obviously decentralized social media. With the Lens protocol choosing Polygon and doing this thing, it really, especially with the current drama around Twitter and Exodus and people going to different way, there are certainly opportunity for Web3 to say, hey, we have a scalable solution. But the gas cost is, you know, for 1,000 users versus for 1 million users versus with 10 million users are going to be significant. What are some of the techniques that you guys are offering to continue reduce the gas cost as, let's say, social application, publishing application comes online to Web3?
Yeah, for sure. So right now there are some tricks people can employ. For example, batching multiple transactions together. So you can batch your transactions and then submit them together to have slightly lower fees. Then you can also build your own custom rollup kind of thing where you do keep all of the transactions on your servers and just publish a Merkle root or just a proof of those things happening. So anyone can verify that this happened, but not all of the actual data is pushed on the chain. Then thirdly, like obviously wait for the ZK rollups to come in and they will definitely natively offer all of this scalability. So right now, if millions of users start using Lens, it is going to be a trouble, but we are going to, both Lens and Polygon are going to scale same with like their usage. As their usage increases, the technology is also going to scale. And the same thing happened with Web 2 as well. Even in Web 2, like any website you're accessing, it's not free for the service provider. Like you are paying for the internet and the website is paying for hosting, for their bandwidth and so on. The only thing is now it's so scalable and so cheap that the websites, most of the websites are free to access right now. Right. They don't charge you fees just to open the website, even though it costs them like a fraction of dollar to serve the web page to you. It's not worth it. And that's what I think is going to happen with Web3 as well, that it, once it actually starts scaling and it is at similar levels as Web2 right now, will still be cost for doing things. So doing attacks like DDoS and everything would be expensive, but for normal usage, it would just be like negligible cost that nobody will bother charging anyone. The developers will be paying for the users, and maybe users will be, there will be an ISP they pay to, or they pay to their wallet a monthly fee to use it or something like that. But that's where I think we are heading towards.
Yeah, I think this idea of revenue management, which is pooling funds and then splitting it based on what it comes on, is definitely something like basically billing and metering infrastructure. If you think about how the global GSM or 5G network works, there's a lot of reimbursements and stuff like that. And the user pays either per call fee, but more likely a kind of postpaid subscription fee. And then you basically can have a phone work everywhere, which is kind of amazing to get internet connectivity. So that type of definitely makes sense. And, you know, what we discussed today is a very important part of those building blocks. Are there, you know, beyond what you guys are working on within your Polygon organization, is there one kind of technology or innovation that you are like really kind of keeping track of that you think that, if that comes as another ingredient to unlock all the things you can see beyond what you guys are working on? Like what excites you the most outside of your own immediate ecosystem and related within the sphere or land of Web3?
For sure. So one thing about Polygon is that if we really, really like any technology that we think is going to be the future, we start building it in-house. We either acquire it or start building it. Yeah. But other than that, for sure, like I am personally, and with Polygon, we are tracking a bunch of new novel technologies out there. Some super exciting lending borrowing platforms and lending borrowing techniques that like on the app chain level that are going to be super interesting, AMMs and exchanges that are going to be super interesting, and like onboarding, offboarding experiences, that is one critical component. Either like we are like obviously hoping someone solves them, a wallet actually listens to our advice and has a good onboarding experience that normal people can use. But we are definitely working with a bunch of industry partners on that to get it across the line. Because if someone, our goal is to have Web3 adoption. If someone actually needs Web3 adoption, all of the components matter, not just the chain. The chain can be super nice, but if the tooling is not nice, you will not enjoy it. If the applications on it are not nice, you will not use it. So we are working with all of the partners to make sure that the Web3 ecosystem is easy to use and people actually like using it.
Yeah, I think there's definitely a lot of room to experiment with design. And I don't mean just pixels and pretty fonts and stuff like that, but actually the flow and the logic and the essentially the engagement cycle, the ability for that kind of not just viralness for spreading, but also once you learn about it to actually have that first level of success. And then, I think Web3 makes people feel they're not good at it for a long time. And then if we can kind of make them feel competent earlier, then they can actually be a participant without giving up, especially with the overall narrative being a little bit less exciting. We really want people to enjoy the thing they're doing and actually experience for the first time. I got to say every day is like, you know, when I still do some banking with the traditional banking systems, like USDC is so much better. Like, this is like so ridiculous. I know that I'm in a minority, We just have to have more people have that eureka experience.
100% agree. Like, Web3 design right now is very, very, very new. Like, one, just because this topic came up, like, one gripe I have with Web3 designs in general is, like, people, for some reason, make everything so small and waste all of the space. Like, you look at MetaMask. It just opens this tiny little box and then you have to scroll down and everything. Why? There's the whole screen in front of you. You open Uniswap, the swap page is just like this big and the whole screen is empty. Like, why? Like, show more data, make things bigger, like make it more easy to use. So yeah, design, definitely lots of things that can be improved there.
Absolutely. And then I think the genre of consumer design, which is, I think, what's been infiltrated versus a practical design for, you know, business application. There's people experimenting, for example, making like, you know, Gnosis Safe wallets for corporation, and they look more like a B2B as. And in some cases, that makes more sense, right? Like, oh, these are the things that happen. These are the things that's going on. I have a bird's eye view of it. And, you know, that's the approach we're taking in building our own tool. We're building a scheduled payment tool on Polygon. So that would be pretty interesting. That you can see your past and future payments and change your amount and the destination and cancel them or fund them, right? So these are the things that make sense to be kind of on one screen. If you're going to be on a DeFi experience on the homepage, that makes sense. So we're taking the approach that let's go for utility versus just one-upping each other on style and trendiness on design. Completely agree. As a practical UX driven design organization, we definitely think that it's important to leverage a screen extent. Is there anything else that you want to cover? I think we cover a lot of ground in this podcast that you want to tell our community about or announcement that could watch out for, especially at the end of this year.
So I would just like to remind everyone that I think ZKVM are going to be the super big thing, the next big thing. So keep an eye. We will be doing announcements as we have things. As I said, right now the audit is going on. As soon as we get audits back, there will be next wave of announcements and things like that. Keep ready. And you have the alpha now, ZK rollups. Learn about them. Start like optimizing for them. Start building for them. And you can get ahead of the curve.
Absolutely. It's something that we are super excited about. We'd love to see all the basic infrastructure that dApp develop depends on to be available on this platform so we can show a next level of scalability with the compatibility that people expect. So Web3 is a long journey. I think we have a little bit of a lull in the wind that's blowing, but I think the builders keep walking, keep marching forward. And thank you for your team effort to achieve what seems like a little bit of an impossible goal of a EVM compatible ZK rollup with the security and scalability characteristics we depend on. But we are counting on you to open up those things, and we will bring all the tools and our knowledge and our insight to those platforms when those exist, and glad to be part of the Polygon ecosystem.
That sounds super nice. And thanks for your kind words. I'll definitely pass on to the teams building it, and they will be super happy to hear them.
Absolutely. And thank you so much, Mudit, for your time today and your insight. And as always, for the community, thanks for your time and attention. And until next time, take care.